So, Philip, could you, as a starter, share with us briefly why is this topic so important to you?
To me, it's important because my whole reason for being is to support change makers. You know, people who are on the edge of culture, whether they're artists or entrepreneurs or intrapreneurs and change makers in organizations, activists, anybody that's kind of trying to bring in something new, right? Because we're in a time where we need a lot of new solutions right now to kind of global problems that we're facing. And we need a whole bunch of people to be willing to step up and actually take that role to lead us into a different kind of future. And that's not an easy job, you know, because you are facing constantly, you know, resistance to bringing in something new. And so it's really important to me personally to support these people that are out there willing to take on that job.
That brings me to the first question, which actually indeed is around the role being different and more difficult than probably most other corporate roles. So why is that? Why is this role more different and more difficult?
Well, if you think about bringing something new, that means you're taking a risk, right? And if you think about children, they are naturally curious, right? They want to know more, they want to find out more new things. And eventually, this other force kicks in, which is about knowing what you know, right? If you think about the first moment when you were a child in school who raised his hand and said something wrong, right? There's a big amount of shame that's associated with that, right? And people laughing at you. And essentially, you've been trained early on that it's dangerous to try something new. It's dangerous to be curious, right? Curiosity killed the cat. We even have sayings like that. And it's safer to know what you know, right? And so when you bring in something new, you're automatically facing resistance. And any system is trying to essentially maintain itself. So if you're the one coming in with some new information, the first reaction that you're going to get is to say no. Right. Even on a bacterial level, if you take, for example, bacterial culture and the external bacteria go out and explore the environment, and they come back to the colony and they signal back to the culture, hey, we found these new receptors. If the bacterial culture, you know, signals back that we don't need this, the cell actually literally kills itself. So there's suicide on a cellular level. Right. And if you look at, you know, artists, if you look at entrepreneurs, we're hearing more and more stories around people really facing such adversity that in their own individuality, they feel, you know, so questioned that they don't even want to be here anymore, right? It's a very difficult job in that sense because you're constantly trying to persuade people, trying to share something that you know is right and important and that other people don't see, right? And you see that individually, you see it in a, so we talk about corporate antibodies, right? We talk about this resistance from the system that wants to maintain itself because it's safe to maintain itself, or it seems safe to maintain itself, right? And so if you're the one bringing something new, all you're going to constantly get is no, you're not okay, whatever you're bringing is not wanted, right? And so having the tension that you have to hold, right, between what is and what you already see needs to be, is a tremendously challenging job.
Tell me a bit more about your adversity and how the corporate system. On the one hand, there's the CEO saying we need innovation and it's important, but and at the same time, there's this like the system that, as you are saying, it's not accepting that. So, how is that happening, and how does it play out for you as an innovator?
Well, I mean, if you think about there's this problem that from above, you know, there, as you said, a lot of CEOs, a lot of people say, hey, we want innovation, we want something new. And that message starts trickling down. And at the same time, there's this conflicting message about, in a way, the efficiency movement we've had since the 80s or 90s, where it's all about cost cutting and, you know, managing your P&L in a way that you're responsible to reduce cost. And so there's oftentimes these conflicting, in a way, conflicting motivations. And even if you look at incentive structures and if you look at how the system is built, it's actually not built to incentivize and support new ideas necessarily. Right? And so there's this conflict because anybody in the organization that I found is if you ask people, they want to do the right thing, right? They want to do the new thing no matter what level of the organization they're on. But oftentimes, you know, I've had conversations where, you know, I talked to two, three subject matter experts in a certain area and I said, well, what is this process like and how can this be improved? And oftentimes people know the answer. And I would come in as a consultant and say, why aren't you doing it? They say, well, you know, a culture, and if you come out and you do something different, you might get your head chopped off, you know, so it's safer to even tolerate a stupid process than to be willing to go out and change it, right? Because You have to now deal with all these stakeholders in the process, and everybody has an opinion, everybody has an idea, and most people will shy away from doing something different because it has a tremendous social risk.
Mm. What about career risk? How have you seen that playing out? I mean, there is this saying that as an innovator, your shelf life is 2-3 years, and then you have to move on because you're done.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you've seen, you know, this kind of bifurcation in the corporate world, where on the one hand, there's people who are on a career track, and then there's those who take special projects. And typically, once you take a special project, you don't go back to the normal route anymore, right? You keep going, as you said, every couple of years, you're changing to a new project. And some of the best innovators I've seen were the ones who are willing to get fired, right? Because they're willing to do the right thing no matter what, right? And sometimes they actually do get fired, and that can happen, right? But it's not about that, and it's not about that career. It's about, you know, really something bigger that you're doing. And this goes a bit into, you know, what can help innovators, and it is a sense of purpose, right? If I have something where I see a bigger picture, where I have something that's personally meaningful to me, that's bigger than my career. Right, and really, it's kind of amazing what people are willing to do when they don't care about their job. You know, I worked with someone recently who was about to leave the company anyway, and because they kind of knew that, you could tell there was a completely different attitude. They're like, it's like, oh, let's try this. Let's go and send the CTO some postcards. You know, and they were willing to do kind of guerrilla moves and kind of fun things because they didn't care. Right, they knew they were going to leave anyway, and that created a tremendous freedom from them. For them, in terms of how they could, you know, go about doing their job.
Have you ever seen someone taking on that mindset whilst not officially leaving, but, you know, just like assuming or playing as it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really the people that come from a place of passion. But if you think about leadership, comes on different levels, right? There's a basic level of opportunist, where it's about me, I want to win, right? There's sort of the diplomat who's kind of power-driven and who loves having power and exert influence over people. You're sort of the experts who really just care about the rational thing to do. And sort of the safer you feel, right, and psychologically, the further you can go to higher levels, where eventually your leadership becomes about service, right? And service to something that you see as impactful and meaningful in the world. You know, we've seen, for example, the whole sustainability, growth of sustainability in the last few years, where people are beginning to say, no, this is what I really care about. I want to make my company sustainable. And I don't care, you know, my job, I don't care about my title, I don't care if someone fires me. I just know that this is the right thing to do because I look out the window, and just yesterday I read a statistic that we've pretty much spent twice as much money in 2016 compared to 2015 on weather-related disasters, right? Nearly twice as much. I mean, it's like billions and billions of dollars. So there's something going on out in the world, and if you see that and if you actually have your heart behind it, your job really doesn't matter that much. But it's really more about why are you here as an individual. And it's easy to get stuck in that job world. And a lot of people begin to define themselves by their job. But we didn't have jobs back in the day. Right? I mean, people did what they cared about and, you know, of course, found a way to sustain themselves. But when you're coming from that sort of higher sense of purpose or higher sense of motivation, those things are details. Right? And you just find ways to do things. Like, for example, even in a lot of the entrepreneurship programs we've done, on day one, we usually say, forget about your company. Who are you? What matters to you as an individual? And how can you use the resources of your company to make something happen with that? Right? And it's astounding when you give people sort of purpose and permission, right, to just be themselves. Suddenly all this creativity is unleashed and all this openness exists that before they were trying to figure out what's my job and how should I do my job? And suddenly they say, oh, I get to be me, I get to be a human, I get to bring myself fully to the table. Wow. And then really astonishing things happen when that comes out.
And permission, is that the key word?
I think so. I mean, there's actually, Google did some research, they called the Project Aristotle, where they're trying to figure out what are factors for high-performing teams, right? And they found, they looked for all these patterns of diverse makeup of the team, different capacities, different skill sets, different age groups, and they couldn't find any patterns. And so they went one level deeper and looked for cultural components and kind of came to realize that sort of personal meaning, knowing that I make an impact, and psychological safety are the key elements for high-performing teams. Right? And psychological safety, if you think about what that means, it means I get to be myself. I don't have to check my personality at the door. I get to just show up fully and feel that I'm respected, that I have good feedback from people, that there's a level of integrity with the people around me, that I know that they can rely on my word and I can rely on theirs. And then I feel safe. And when I feel safe, I'm willing to do things that maybe even are a little challenging, or I'm willing to do, you know, more work. I'm willing to do, go deeper in my work than if I'm not feeling safe, right? And we've really, if you look at all these efficiency efforts, you know, since the 80s and 90s, a lot of that has eroded psychological safety, which is, I think, why also innovation has become such an issue. It has to be, you know, become a topic even, because we're not doing it naturally anymore. Right? The natural default is to hunker down and play safe.
Perfect. Let's zoom in on the high performance issue at in the third question for this interview. But I just want to zoom in on two things to wrap up the first part of the of this conversation. So you mentioned culture at some point, and you mentioned system. And there's this saying that, hey, if you want to have a feel for the culture, just walk into a meeting, and you know that's basically culture in action. And there's also this notion of systems, right? So in the end, we're all creating the system basically every moment. And so if you're the innovator, I guess the balance is, or like the tipping point could be the moment where there's more and more innovators, where suddenly the system or the normal way of doing things is different. So if how do you kind of assess where you are and where your organization is? So if you are the innovator, how can you assess how culture is tipping and how the system is tipping, and you know, how long you have to wait before it gets business as usual?
That's a very, very fine point. And I love your example of going into a meeting to determine a culture, right? And really, if you think about culture, it's one of those very big words that people use a lot these days, which is awesome, because there's been finally new awareness of it. Years ago, when I started in this world, people said, oh, culture, you mean theater or opera? Right? And now people are beginning to realize that there's this culture in an organization. And the working definition that we use for culture is how we do things around here. Right? And if you think about here's the individual and how they act and how they show up and how they operate, right? And if they have multiple people operating together, so the culture is your emergent phenomena that results from these interactions with people, right? And eventually, those kind of relationships between people become formalized, and then it becomes a system, right? Even if you think about a hierarchy or certain, you know, structures that you have, in systemic structures that you have in an organization, down to the incentive models, those are in a way crystallized culture, right? It's essentially the values that you had, that you were living for your behaviors, that eventually became formalized and became the system. But the key here is to understand that it is a process, right? That every individual, ultimately through how they show up, impact culture, right? Like, for example, we do a lot of what we call organic organizational transformation, where the idea is to really take individuals from different areas of the organization, kind of infuse them with new spirit and send them back into their departments. And they now, and with the mandate to say, your job is to affect the culture around you, right? And you actually are the origin of culture, right? There's a lot of times when you come into meetings, people tend to bitch about culture a lot and say, oh, complain this, and our culture is not that, our culture is not that. But it's like, we remind people that you are the source of it, right? And there's a certain, this idea of self-reliance and self-management and self-organization that are beginning to be topics. That's exactly it, right? The self-reliance is to say, I am the source of culture, right? I am the one who's starting that. And even if my current culture might not be what I would like it to be yet, I have the ability to impact that, right? And really to bring back that power to the individual, right? Because we tend to see ourselves compared to this big system and feel helpless or feel small in comparison. And that's, I think, one of the worst things, right? Is when once you accept that you're small, then you're back to that bacterial cell that I was talking about earlier, where you try and make a change and it doesn't work. You try and make a change, it doesn't work, and eventually you don't even want to be here anymore. Right? Mm-hmm. So instead of that, really remember that you are the origin of it.
Beyond this not really caring about your job, are there any characteristics or personality traits or whatever label you want to put on them that you have seen that make innovators, you know, some innovators more successful than others?
I think, I mean, there's some, when we talk about personal innovation capacities, right? If you think about a human, we have different sort of circuitry or different parts of ourselves, right? We have a body, we have emotions, we have a mind, we have our relationships in our community, we have sort of a creative voice and an authorship, right? A unique voice that we all have. We have sort of the capacity to see a bigger picture and really put ourselves in context of some purpose. And I think really working on those levels consciously is required if an innovator, right? I mean, it starts with physical health, right? How hydrated am I? Right? How much water do I have? And that's one of those things that people forget about easily. But even if you're one glass short of the amount of water that you should have, your peripheral vision is impaired, your short-term memory is impaired, your mood is adversely affected, right? So making sure that you have water, making sure that you have nutrition that supports you, you know, exercise, you know, resilience for exercise, and even the ability to push through, right? If you think about running or something where there's that moment where you're like, oh, I really don't want to run anymore, but you keep going anyway and you push through that. Or if you think about yoga where you might be holding a pose and it's really stressful and your body's going, starting to shake and you're like, really don't want to hold this pose anymore, but you've learned to breathe through it. And by breathing through it, you're actually pushing out your sympathetic nervous response. You're actually stretching that point where your body kicks in and goes into stress mode. Right? And so you can learn to really begin to embody this better. Right? So there's a body level, there's, you know, I just mentioned the sympathetic nervous system, there's your emotional landscape. Like we have, by default, we're all wired to look for stress. Like we're all wired to look for danger. There's this part in your brain called the amygdala that constantly scans the environment for potential threats. Right? And as soon as it finds one, your sympathetic nervous system kicks in, which means you're constricting your breath, you're tightening your muscles, you're kind of pretending not to be there so that the saber-toothed tiger doesn't see you. It's a very old instinct here. Oxygen flow, which doesn't make for very good thinking. Right? So to learn to say, hey, you know what, I'm feeling stressed right now, and to be actually in touch with that, and to say, I need a moment, take a deep breath, actively, you know, engage with your parasympathetic nervous system that now tells your body everything is okay, you can relax, right? Learning those kind of capacities, to be able to, you know, really distinguish your emotions, to know, hey, wow, this made me feel angry, instead of being angry. Right, to have that separation of being able to see how your environment and how the events in your environment make you feel, right? But to understand that really how you feel is your responsibility, and that there might be emotion signal that's coming at you. Right? Like for example, if someone crosses boundaries, you know, that makes you angry. Take a breath and come back to, wow, okay, why did this make me angry? And have a kind of a stratified response to that rather than just reacting to it. Right? But even then, you know, information on a mental level is the same thing, to make sure that information we take in, right, is well curated. Right? Like for example, I don't watch the news much or don't read the newspaper much, and I pick very specifically what I want to pay attention to, because if I watch CNN every morning, I'd be angry most of the time, right? And I'd be running around worrying about the world rather than actually focusing on what needs attention, right? And especially because a lot of it is repetitive information anyway. And if you go on social media or, you know, have constant notifications on your phone, those things that distract you, to really be very clear about what am I letting into my field, right? How am I processing thought and new ideas, and how am I sharing with discernment, right? So that I'm also not creating stress out there for other people by just passing on information. Like we see that with office gossip, for example, a lot, right? Where there's, you know, one rumor that suddenly goes, spreads like wildfire throughout the office, right? And it's our responsibility what we put out there, right? So to be very conscious of what do we take in, what do we put out on those levels as well, right? And, you know, I mentioned community. That's another one, to really know who is your community, who are the people that are your supporters, right? Whether it's your family or whether it's your friends, to have, you know, an R&D team, to have some other peers, you know, I mean, which is why is, you know, conferences like the one that I met you at are so important, because you see that you're not alone. Are actually other people out there that I can call up and ask and say, hey, you have done this, can you give me some pointers here, right? To have the peer community to support you. Those are really important things. On a higher level, sort of a transpersonal level, there is engaging with your creative voice. Right, and whether it's through drawing, through writing, through journaling, however you want to do that, but to have some means to to be able to get your thought out in an unstructured way, right, where you can actually connect and tap into your genius and connect to your sort of higher self. That's a really important capacity. And then being able to see the bigger, right? I think that's a really, in any situation, to be able to up-level and say, okay, how can I reframe this? What happened here right now? What's really important here? How is this in service to something bigger than the experience that I just had? And ultimately, as I mentioned earlier already, have some sense of purpose. Right? Really think about, why am I doing this in the big picture? Right? Is it just because I'm trying to get a promotion, and so I am taking on this innovation project? Great. If that's your purpose, at least you have one. Right? And the bigger you can make it, the better. Right? If you really have something that is beyond your job title and beyond even your organization's business model, where you can say, I really care about this, right? Then you have a whole other level of resilience. Right? I worked with a company this summer, and we did an entrepreneur's boot camp, and we had all these different teams who chose purpose-driven topics. And several of them actually came up to me and said, you know, I would have given up on this project if it was a normal company project, but because I care, we went anyway, and we went further, and I made one more phone call, and I made one more thing that then actually resolved it and allowed us to move forward, right? But it was because there was a emotional investment here, there was a personal investment in the purpose behind why I'm doing what I'm doing, that then allowed them to transcend some of those difficulties.
I would like to focus on two words in a minute, purpose and resilience. Just as a response to what you're saying, and it sounds like obvious, and it also sounds like a lot. So I'm an innovator. My day-to-day is filled, packed with meetings and all of this stuff. I have a family as well. This sounds like almost like a day job next to my day job. So is there any, where should I start? Or is there like something that I can do and maybe that version that helps me in all of these things?
Well, I mean, the easiest thing you can do is create some sort of morning and evening ritual for yourself, right? Even if it's 5 minutes. And I know that we're all very busy people. And as I said, if you have a family, if you have friends, if you have all these things on top of your job, it's close to impossible to find really the time that you really would need. But I think there's two things. One is to really create some sort of morning ritual where you start and you give yourself, if it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and however you want to do that, to just be with yourself. And to really know that this is your day, think about what are the key themes, what are the big picture items for that day, so you're not running around, getting up, and immediately being in reactive mode, right? Because if you get up and you hit the snooze button and you hit it again, and then by the time you have to get up, you're really late, and now you're rushing and you're getting ready, and your family is in the way of you trying to get to your coffee, and then the people are on the way to the office and traffic, and you're already annoyed by the way you get into the office, and you're already behind. Right? And somehow someone else owns your day at that point. Right? So to even begin to say, hey, I can take 5 minutes for myself, and I'm just going to sit here, or I'm going to stand here with a friend who says the first 100 breaths in the morning are his. And he just stands in the middle of the room and takes 100 breaths. And just, that's it. No big deal, no other crazy thing that he has to do. Simply stand there and say, now I've taken my 100 breaths. Now I'm ready to go out in the world and take care of the rest of the world because I've already taken care of myself. And this is really that idea that extreme performance requires extreme self-care, that you do need that time. And in the end, actually, you're probably faster and more efficient around what you do if you take that time, right? There's a bit of that kind of paradox in a way. The Navy SEALs talk about slow is smooth, smooth is fast, right? Because we want to do things fast and want to go and go, 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 go. But if you actually pull back for a moment and really take that breath, we have the capacity to create on a whole nother level. And that's when we become much more effective and efficient in our actions. And if you look at really successful managers, they're actually often type B personalities. They're not even the type A that has to get shit done all the time and has a long list of hundreds of things. But they're actually taking that moment to say, let me think about this for 5 minutes. And instead of running after a solution and trying to find a solution out there and spending all that time trying to find that information, to take a moment to sit and actually think, you might actually have that information already. Right? And it's really creating that space for yourself. So the morning ritual or the evening ritual to take a 5 minutes at the end of the day, reflect what happened today, what worked today, what didn't work today, you know, how did I show up today, what did I like about myself today, what didn't I like about myself today, to be in that meta dialogue with yourself, right, actually creates tremendous spaciousness in the long run. Right? And so it's a little counterintuitive because I'm already busy, I don't want to add something to it. That's what I'm saying, like, take 5 minutes. It doesn't have to be the hour of yoga every day or an hour of meditation every day. You know, there's even studies that say that meditating 5 minutes throughout the day a couple of times is actually more effective than to meditate for an hour in the morning, right? Because if you, for example, spend an hour in the morning and you meditate and everything is beautiful and you're peaceful and blissed out, and then life happens, right? And you're right back in this mode, right? And so instead of that, to say, hey, my job is to continue to bring myself to a calm state throughout the day, right? And then it can be 2 minutes, it can be 5 minutes, it can be one breath, right? And it doesn't have to be this huge elaborate thing, because as I said, I mean, there's 100,000 things you could do to improve your, you know, lifestyle and performance and your balance, but nobody has really the time for it, right? So it's really, for the most part, I think it's a stance, and to say, I don't want to be stressed, right? And have sort of a zero tolerance policy for stress, and say, hey, as soon as I'm stressed, I'm going to take five. I'm going to go away for a moment. I'm going to breathe for a moment. I'm going to take a walk outside, look at the sky, hug a tree, whatever you need to do to come back down and calm yourself down, right? And do that throughout the day as much as you can.